This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
This is Well, 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 sex, health and well-being in our LGBTR communities.
Presented by Joy sponsor VAC, the Victorian AIDS Council.
Good evening and welcome to Well, 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 brought to you each week by the Victorian AIDS Council. In our show, we tackle all things surrounding sex, sexual health and the overall health and well-being of our LGBTI communities. My name is Jessie. It's an absolute pleasure to be here with you today. It's been a while and I'm joined today by my lovely co-host, Liam Clark. For those of you who are wondering, he's in the studio with me today and who's a DC comic fan, he does look like Clark Kent from Superman. He's got the sexy glasses as well. So Liam, it is lovely to have you on board.
Well, thank you for having me here, Jessie. So today we're going to be having a chat with Kim Burns, who is running a specific dementia-related project. Now, you met Kim at the LBQ Women's Conference, didn't you?
I sure did. And to be honest, I totally stumbled upon this topic because I was helping out chair some sessions during the LBQ Women's Conference, and she happened to be one of the speakers in my session at the time. To be honest, I didn't actually realise that Kim's presentation would actually be the most touching and emotional presentation that I would have actually watched all week. Even when Kim first started giving a presentation, she apologised to the crowd and said, "I'm sorry that it's not as sexy as some of the other presentations," which is really ridiculous because I can guarantee you, if not all of us, then the majority of the people in the room that day and even people that I know will usually love someone suffering from dementia, know someone who's suffering from dementia, or at least know someone who's experienced a loved one going through that. It is quite a difficult topic to chat about. It's not the most sexy, as I guess you could call it, but in a way, it's probably indicative of the reflection of the attitude in Australia towards dementia. The elders maybe don't have the respect or value that we would like to give them and society here, and I guess it does get swept under the rug and it can be not addressed. Mm. So that's what we're kind of doing here today. But a crazy statistic that would be interesting for us, especially in the field of work that we do, is that people who are living with dementia, 15 times more, sorry, there are 15 times more people living with dementia than there are with HIV in Australia.
Oh, wow.
Which I thought was a pretty interesting statistic.
Yeah.
But probably a lot less attention.
Yeah, it's not one that's spoken about, and it's not a little issue. Easily swept under the rug. It doesn't go away. It's our family. It's our loved ones.
Absolutely. So that's who we're going to be having on as our guest for today.
Yep.
Pretty excited to bring her in. So we could kind of go ahead and chat about that.
Yeah. But first, we've got some music. You're listening to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
For sexual health, mental health, and your overall well-being, this is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
Yes, indeed. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. Good evening to you all out there on this fabulous Monday evening. I am joined tonight by Jessie.
Jessie, indeed. Hi, Liam. How's it going?
It's good. Good. I'm feeling good. I'm enjoying the show so far.
Oh, good.
So this week we're talking about dementia and aging in the LGBT population with a specific focus on the LBQ population. Now, do you have any experience with any family members, loved ones going through this?
My initial answer to that was going to be a no, but then I thought back and I was like, well, actually it's an obvious yes, because when I was much younger, my grandmother, she ended up suffering from dementia for at least the past 3 or 4 years of her life before she passed. And it was pretty confronting, but because I was so young, I guess I didn't realize what that was like. But it got to a point where we used to visit her every Sunday, and that was amazing, and it was really cute. There was a language barrier there because she could only speak Cantonese, and my Cantonese, I have to say, is far from perfect. But my dad would kind of tell me that it got to a point where she stopped recognizing him. And I guess I didn't really realize how I guess, devastating that was until I got a bit older and was even thinking about it myself. And I thought, could you imagine the day that my parents, like, if that ever happened, and my parents, one of my parents didn't recognize me, I'd be devastated. I'd be really, really devastated. Yeah. And I know at the time, my dad, you know, back home in Malaysia, would have been so unequipped or unskilled to know how to deal with a situation like this. And you kind of just do the best that you can.
Yeah.
And surround them with loved ones, whether they know you or not. But yeah, that would have been my personal experience with dementia, I suppose. What about yourself, Liam?
Yeah, I'm actually going through something like that at the moment with my grandmother.
Right.
My grandmother, I forget exactly how old she is. I think she's 97 now.
That's decent.
Yeah, you know, she's had a great innings, old Thelma.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she started losing her memory quite badly a couple of years ago.
Mm.
And at first, she was like sort of self-aware enough. And
was it kind of long-term memory, short-term memory?
Long-term and short-term.
Right.
It was the saddest part was my grandma was a scientist.
True.
And then a science teacher after she retired from that. So my grandma was a brilliant woman.
Yeah.
And she could remember that she was a brilliant woman, but couldn't remember things. I was studying linguistics at university a few years ago.
Yeah.
And I just remember seeing her frustration when I mentioned something. And she was like, I used to know this. What is linguistics?
Oh, no. It was
heartbreaking. And I went and saw her last Christmas. And she said, oh, my God, Liam, I haven't seen you since you were like 10.
Oh, no.
And she couldn't remember the names of my cousins.
Yeah.
So now it's kind of got to the point where, according to my dad, that she doesn't really remember that she has grandchildren.
Yeah.
So it's we can't go and see her because that distresses her and she doesn't know who we are.
As like strangers and stuff.
Yeah. So it's really, really upsetting. And at the same time, I know it's a little bit cowardly of me, but I kind of don't want to see her that way.
Yeah.
I want to remember her as the brilliant woman she was.
Of course.
Which again, makes me feel terrible because I feel like
a bad grandson.
I don't
think that's cowardly at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's completely understandable. But you know how they say sometimes ignorance is bliss. And sometimes, I guess, when you're so self-aware of the fact that you were brilliant
yeah.
and you can't remember, it's more of a curse, isn't it?
Oh,
because
yeah.
Because it would be great to be ignorant sometimes.
Yeah, and it was around about that time, every time she got a cold, she would make a joke. And she's like, oh, I think this is it. So I think my grandma is ready to go.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, if you get to 97, then yeah.
Totally. Well, there you go. It seems this is just between the two of us thinking we don't have much experience with dementia. And there you go. Just a little personal chat about our experiences with dementia.
Yeah.
And in saying that, it guarantee you that it affects a lot more people in a closer vicinity than we think.
Absolutely.
So here we go to a show about dementia.
You're listening to Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
This is Well, 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 presented by Joy sponsor VAC on Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. My name is Jessie and I've got my co-host Liam. We have got Kim Burns in the studio with us who is going to be talking about dementia. Kim, how are you this evening?
I'm fine, thanks, Jessie.
Thank you so much for agreeing to have a chat with us about dementia. Now, for the sake of our listeners, would you mind telling us a little bit about yourself and what role you have at the moment?
I actually work for the Dementia Centre for Research Collaboration, or the DCRC. We're based at the University of New South Wales in Sydney. Our team is headed by the wonderful Professor Henry Brodaty, and we focus on how we can support those caring for people with dementia.
Excellent. And for the sake of our listeners, you know, we kind of have been throwing around this term dementia a fair bit now, including in the introduction that Liam and I were having a chat earlier. So how about we break it down for them and what is the definition of dementia?
Okay. Dementia is not actually a specific disease in itself, but it's a collection of symptoms, and more than 100 disorders can actually cause dementia. Dementia, broadly speaking, affects our memory, thinking, and behaviour. And ultimately, it progresses to a point where it will affect the person's actual working and social life and their ability to perform everyday tasks.
Yeah, I guess other than the obvious reason of the fact that dementia can so severely affect your quality of life if you do, you know, end up suffering from dementia, why do you think it's so important that we actually do address this issue, especially in Australia?
Sure. Dementia is currently the single greatest cause of disability in Australians age 65 and over. So throughout Australia, it is the greatest cause of disability.
Wow.
And it's also...
Oh, my God.
I didn't... Yep. Like, that is a crazy... That is bizarre to hear.
Scary.
Yeah.
And it's also the second leading cause of death in Australia.
What? Ahead of smoke... Like, I guess smoking is number one?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. Is this sort of like, in terms of cause of death, I'm guessing you're talking about like how the behaviours lead to neglect or something?
Actually the damage to the brain ultimately leads to damage to all aspects of the body and death.
Yeah,
it's a terminal illness. There is no doubt. It's terminal. Yeah. Yeah,
totally. I guess Liam and I.
Yeah, I had no idea of
learning.
The severity.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So speaking about, can you kind of throw some more statistics at us? You've said that it is the number one greatest cause of disability for Australians aged 65 and over, and you've also said that it's a second leading cause of death. What else can you kind of give us and give us a little snapshot picture of what dementia looks like?
Sure. So worldwide, the statistics tell us there are more than 47 million people living with dementia at the moment.
Okay.
And this actually includes more than 414,000 Australians. So this is last year's figures, so it might even be a little higher than that now.
Wow.
That 414,000 actually includes 26,000 with what we call younger onset dementia. So it's not just an old person's disease.
Yeah.
In fact, in Australia, approximately 250 people are diagnosed with dementia every day.
That is crazy. I can't
believe
that.
It is. It's huge. Yep. Ooh. Yep. And the numbers of people with dementia worldwide are projected to increase to more than 130 million by 2050 because populations are aging all over the world.
So what are some of the risk factors of dementia?
Okay, the biggest risk factors for dementia are our age, so as we get older, and the genes that we've actually inherited.
Really?
But of course, we can't do anything to change those. We can't choose our parents, and we can't actually stop the aging process as much as we'd like to. And so it's important that we do something about the things we can control, such as our lifestyle.
Definitely. Just before we get onto the lifestyle part, I'm so curious about the fact that your genes actually do play a role in that. I kind of had the impression that it was one of those non-discriminatory diseases, you know, and it's like we all get older, so it's kind of hard to run from it. But I didn't realize that your genetics played much of a role, if anything, in how likely you are to get it. Is there any kind of specific on kind of what cultural background or ethnicity that tends to be more vulnerable?
No, cultural background typically doesn't play a role.
Mm.
There is a small group of people with dementia where that genetic influence is stronger.
Mm.
And really you have to have an immediate relative with dementia for your risk to be increased.
Sure.
But it doesn't mean you will get it.
So what are some things that could help defer the onset of dementia?
Okay, so basically the things that are good for our heart health, which we hear about all the time, are also good for our brain health.
Mm.
These things do help to reduce our risk of dementia. So things like being physically and socially active, challenging our brain by learning new things and just keeping our brain active, and following a healthy diet, such as a Mediterranean diet.
Ooh, that sounds delicious.
Mediterranean diet. Can we get specific here?
Okay. So a Mediterranean diet emphasizes basically plant-based foods over other proteins. So fruits, veggies, whole grains, legumes, nuts. It also suggests that we replace butter with healthy fats such as olive oil.
Yeah.
And we use less salt and lean sources of protein over red meat.
So pretty much all the stuff we know we should do but don't.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, yep. I know. It's surprising to realize how much our diet can play into our overall health and well-being, isn't it? Like, we really are mm-hmm. what we eat. So it's kind of good yes. to get that reiterated. In terms of if we had a loved one or someone kind of experiencing this, what specifically do you think we could look out for to help mm-hmm. us recognize dementia?
Sure. Typically, people will notice problems with memory first. That's typically the first complaint that we hear, particularly problems with recent memory. So most often, long-term memory for things that happened years earlier is unaffected in the early stages.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What are some of the early signs of dementia?
Mm-hmm.
Does that vary?
It does. You're right. It varies from person to person.
Mm-hmm.
But also they can be quite subtle and not immediately obvious. And quite often you'll find that it will be dismissed or it'll be mistaken as perhaps part of just getting older, that type of thing. As well as memory loss, what you find is people close to the person may notice changes in their personality. They might also notice that they're less inclined to take an interest in activities that they previously enjoyed.
Mm.
They might also withdraw from social activities and occasions. They could eventually get to the point, too, where they could have difficulty with just everyday tasks that have never been challenging for them in the past.
Yeah.
As always, anybody with concerns about their memory should talk to their doctor first and foremost.
Of course, of course.
Now, this might be a little bit of a redundant question. I don't know if it's a stupid one, but where do things like Alzheimer's and Parkinson fit in?
Oh, not a stupid question at all, Liam.
No.
Mm-hmm. Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease are just two of the most common types of dementia.
Right.
So these conditions actually cause dementia, along with the other most common ones, vascular dementia, dementia with Lewy bodies, and frontotemporal dementia.
Right. So because Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are always the ones that we kind of tend to hear, so it's just really understanding that language, the fact that dementia is an overall umbrella term.
Yeah.
And that things like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's cause dementia then?
Yes.
Great. Thanks.
But they're only some of the conditions that actually cause dementia.
Of course. Yeah, because there's a whole wide range of them, isn't it? But I would love to get into all of that detail. But what I actually did want to ask you was about the young onset dementia. Now, I know you mentioned a statistic earlier, and I think it's defined as dementia that occurs or starts before the age of 65, am I right?
That's right,
Can
yeah.
you elaborate yep, yep. on this young onset dementia a little bit more?
Yep, sure. So, and we should just say that in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples, it's actually defined as dementia that occurs before the age of 50.
Is that
because of the,
the
different
health outcomes.
Issues?
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Okay,
yes,
interesting.
Yep. So just to be clear, yeah, yep. So approximately 1 in every 1,000 person that is diagnosed with dementia will be under the age of 65. And because it's typically an unexpected and less common diagnosis in people under age 65, it can be very difficult to diagnose, and there's often a delay in getting a diagnosis.
I can imagine. And is it usually seen that the ones who have young onset dementia are caused by different factors? So obviously, before you said one of the risk factors was getting older and your genetics and stuff. Is there a differ in the main cause? Is it like trauma to the head or something like that, perhaps?
Sometimes, but most often, the conditions that are most often associated with young onset can be the frontotemporal dementia. So that typically can occur in younger people, but any form of dementia basically can occur in younger people.
Mm.
How do the needs of younger people living with dementia differ?
Yeah, young onset dementia is associated with higher levels of distress, not only for the person with dementia themselves, but the burden on their family. tends to be greater than for those who develop dementia later in life. If you think about the emotional and financial strain from just the need to reduce or stop work early to actually care for someone who has dementia in your family, and then those care needs have to be balanced with the needs of possibly younger children or older parents, because we all have those responsibilities at that time. Community and residential care services are also primarily tailored for the needs of older people. There are very few services that have actually been set up to specifically meet the needs of those with young onset dementia, because the numbers are smaller.
Totally. And I can imagine as a young person, as it's coming on, you don't want to be that person kind of, in a way, in the, like, older folks' home and you're the only young person there, or you are meant to be at the prime of your life kind of, you know, earning money as well and, you know, haven't built up much super or something like that. I can imagine that the demand is very different and the needs are quite different.
And there's often plans there to enjoy your retirement, enjoy your grandchildren. All those things are impacted.
I know. It's so true. So, actually, what is, considering, you know, we are VAC and stuff, and I have an interest as to know about what HIV-associated dementia is. And how it differs from non-HIV-associated dementia.
I guess it's different in that it only happens to those with HIV.
Yeah, of course. But
the thing is that with better treatments, a growing number of people who have been diagnosed with HIV are living to age 65 and beyond. And HIV itself carries an increased risk of what we call comorbid or other health conditions that occur with the HIV.
Mm-hmm.
And dementia is one of those comorbid health conditions.
So how likely is it that somebody living with HIV will develop HIV-associated dementia?
Okay. Some people with HIV will experience neurocognitive disorders, so changes to their brain as part of their HIV. We call that HAND, or HIV-associated neurocognitive disorder, and that just can occur as part of their disease process. A small number of these people will have their cognitive symptoms become so severe that that then becomes a diagnosis of HIV-associated dementia.
Right.
The good news is that the newer HIV drugs are actually also more effective in helping to reduce or prevent HIV-associated dementia.
Could we potentially say that kind of helping us prevent HIV-associated dementia goes hand in hand with getting on top of, you know, the antiretroviral treatment that's specifically to treat HIV? It's not like a whole nother thing. It's just kind of start with the basics, be good with the medication, early treatment kind of thing?
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so what kind of extra care or precautions you'd say are associated with HIV-associated dementia?
Okay, so we know that sadly HIV/AIDS is still a disease that's associated with stigma and discrimination in our society today. And this combined with the effects of just having dementia can mean that it's more difficult. It's very difficult for all those involved. So HIV-associated dementia can increase a person's isolation and loneliness, adding to their struggle. So dementia is isolating for a start. HIV can compound that.
Now, Kim, we were having a chat earlier about different types of dementia. I did, before we go into talking about this project you're working on, I did want to touch on the topic of excessive drinking when it came to dementia. So what would be defined as excessive drinking? How often and how long would that have to go on for it to result as a risk factor?
Yeah. Thanks, Jesse. Well, alcohol-related dementia, as we call it, can affect any of us at any age. So you don't have to be old to get it. So that's one point. Any of us that drink alcohol beyond the recommended limits, basically, over a period of years, is at risk of developing alcohol-related dementia. Now, the research tells us that 6 standard drinks a day for males and 4 for women is basically as high as any of us should go. The risk of actually developing alcohol-related dementia increases if you actually drink at high levels regularly.
And that's one of the things that we don't realize, because I guess drinking is a very big part of like Aussie culture, and it's a social thing. It's even a family thing. But mm-hmm. we can be kind of unaware because it's just kind of so normalized, isn't it? But it's good to Absolutely. Kind of be aware of these things. Now, I'm just going to jump straight into it. And I'd love for you to give us a quick introduction into the project that you've been working on.
Yep. Thanks, Jessie. Our team at the Dementia Centre for Collaborative Research are actually working on a project to develop an e-learning resource that will support those caring for people with dementia who are LGBTI.
Right.
So something that specifically touches on the special needs of LGBTI people with dementia.
Oh, man, so many questions I could come back with. But firstly, okay, so you mentioned change behaviours. Could we expand on that a little bit? What exactly are these change behaviours and what do some of them look like?
Okay, so change behaviours are something that occur in up to 90% of people with dementia. So they're very common, but sadly we're not always great at actually looking after people when they present with these behaviours. Many factors contribute to what these behaviours look like. Typically, they happen when a person's impaired thinking means they can no longer process what is happening around them effectively, and that situation can cause them significant distress. The changed behaviours, which are also known by a whole lot of other terms, which I won't go into, but I should at least state, these changed behaviours are often the visible signs of that distress that the person with dementia is experiencing. Now, their individual history, the environment that they're living in, their physical health, their personal interactions with everybody around them, and their lived experience all contribute to how the person with dementia interprets and sometimes misinterprets what is happening around them.
Right.
And anybody with dementia can experience this, no matter where they're living.
Of course.
So it's not restricted to people who are living with their families at home or just people in nursing home. Anyone with dementia can experience this.
Yeah, and because of the nature of the disease, I suppose, is so personal, which means that it varies from person to person, so it must be quite difficult to kind of put a blanket statement or blanket definitions on anything, right?
Yes.
Now, I know you mentioned specifically the LGBTI community. Why have you chosen to, or not you specifically, but this project, why is it chosen specifically to target this particular population?
Yes. We know that the LGBTI community has a history of discrimination, trauma, isolation, rejection, and all of these factors can come to the fore when the person has dementia. Mm-hmm. That level of distress, of course, contributes to the behaviours that we see when that person is experiencing impaired thinking in their dementia.
Sure. So you would say that they are potentially at greater risk of developing dementia? Maybe more vulnerable?
Anybody who has experienced trauma in their history is more likely to relive that when they have dementia.
Sure.
I mean, one of the reasons for that is that as we lose more and more of our recent memory function, that historical thinking, those memories from our past, tend to become more prominent.
Mm.
And if that's where you've lived through some terrible experiences, then that can become front of mind again.
Totally. And I guess especially specifically at this point in time, those who are kind of 65 and above, that was kind of the period, especially in Australia, where there was a big kind of change from being a massive amount of stigma and discrimination associated with same-sex attracted or, you know, gender diverse. And only slowly recently has it kind of become a lot more accepted and stuff. But you're still kind of dealing with this small little cohort that has been a massive part of that change and stuff. So it's quite a unique time, isn't it, at the moment?
Absolutely. Many of the generation that are most at risk for dementia have actually stayed invisible to much of the community for much of their lives. They may not have children to help support them when they develop dementia.
Of course.
They may have become isolated from their biological family throughout their lives, and they don't have support there to help them if they end up with dementia.
Of course, because I suppose especially those of that particular generation are much less likely to have had adopted children or have had children themselves or anything like that, which would play a really big role in caring for our elderly above 65. Now, I just wanted to know, why is it that you chose specifically, I know when we mentioned, we're having a chat off air, you mentioned you specifically chose to sort of identify the project by using LGBTI as opposed to something like sex and gender diverse or something like that. Could you kind of elaborate on that just a little?
Yes, that's a good question. We have consulted extensively with those who are caring for LGBTI people with dementia throughout Australia and those with lived experience and those who are experts in this field. And the advice that we've been given is to stay away from other terms, so particularly queer, because this is the older generation that we're largely focusing on, and it's not a term that was particularly acceptable all those years ago. And I remember growing up, and it was not a term that was used in a positive
way. Yeah, totally. So it's kind of a language thing, isn't it?
Now, just quickly going back to the change behaviours, can you give us some specific examples from your experiences of looking after people with dementia?
Yeah, thanks, Liam. The change behaviours that we see in all people with dementia can be happening more than one at a time, but the common examples are aggression, agitated behaviours, so disrupted sleep, and quite often disrupting the sleep of others around them, calling out over and over and over, and wandering away from their safe place, whether that be at home or in a residential facility, as well as psychological symptoms.
Mention that, what do you mean by calling out? Is this sort of like calling out at something or someone that isn't there, or kind of just like reverting back to a particular situation in their life? Or I just kind of wanted to clarify by what you meant by calling out.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good point. So calling out actually covers a range of vocal behaviours.
Right.
So it can be anything from screaming to repeating the same question over and over and over.
Mm-hmm.
It can also be non-verbal sounds, so almost like grunting, but basically, they are all signs of distress.
Yeah.
They just differ in how they present. Yeah.
Okay.
As well as psychological symptoms, such as delusions, hallucinations, anxiety, apathy, and even depression in dementia. I guess what these behaviours all have in common is that they cause significant distress for the family and the staff, the care staff looking after them as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, thinking about how that might specifically relate to an LGBTI example, I can recall the situation where a transgender person, at the point in their dementia, forgetting where they are as far as their gender identity and going into the wrong toilet or the wrong bathroom.
Of course.
It's very easy for other residents that they're living with to overreact, or if they're living in the community, for that to be a problem with other members of society around them. That overreaction will very likely prompt a change behaviour, and understandably.
Yeah, indeed. And I wonder if that is got something to do with reverting back to a particular time in their life that they, as you mentioned earlier, experienced trauma or a massive change or something. I can't even begin to imagine the so many different factors that kind of lead into a situation like that. You know, something that we really take for granted sometimes, as basic as, you know, which toilet we would go into. And I can imagine staff would play a really large role in making them feel comfortable or not comfortable, or kind of like alleviating some of the distress,
Yes, absolutely. Reassuring the person, you know, just gently redirecting and guiding them, quietly explaining to others around them why this might be happening without obviously disclosing personal details, but just trying to help people understand why this might be occurring.
So what specific things could service providers do to create a more inclusive service to better support the aging GLBTI population?
Okay, so yes, there are things like your physical environment, as we said, making it obvious that you are an LGBTI inclusive service, and training your staff to be more aware. But also staff need to be supported in their role of actually providing LGBTI inclusive care. If we think about the people working, the direct care staff working in aged care services, they quite often come from other cultural and religious backgrounds where LGBTI might be less accepted than it is in Australia. So, for example, some of them will come from cultures where LGBTI is still considered not only sinful but still criminal.
Absolutely.
And that can be very ingrained in their own approach to life in general. So those staff may need to be supported, not just educated, but also supported to actually be able to provide LGBTI inclusive care in their workplace.
Absolutely. I think that's an important thing to remember for those of us who are probably delivering training or who work in the sector, is just to be sensitive to the needs of the staff as well, you know, because being a carer is an incredibly, like, it can be a really difficult job and, you know, can be overworked, and I just don't think they have anywhere near enough credit as they deserve.
Absolutely, you're right there, Jessie. Yes, yes. Sadly, this is an industry that doesn't pay its direct care workers well, certainly not as well as they deserve to be paid. They do work hard and we do ask a lot of them. And for some of them, when English is not their first language, then actually learning about not just dementia but also LGBTI inclusive dementia care can actually be quite challenging. Often staff have to do the training in their own time, or they need to actually do it in 15-minute snatches here and there when they're at work.
Yeah.
So not easy.
Of course. And just a quick one, could you tell us what is it that healthcare providers, what does it look like for them to actually support their staff? You know, we can easily just say supports the staff. Can you give us a couple of quick specific examples?
Yeah, so to actually make it possible for them to access training for a start, and to be aware that some of these some of this information may bring up personal issues for them, and to actually be there for them and to give staff access, you know, to actually talk to management or workplace counselling where this does raise issues. Some of these staff will be going home to a community where even providing assistance to LGBTI people will be something that's seen as confronting and unacceptable.
Indeed, yes. Like basic things we take for granted, isn't it? Okay, thank you so much for that, Kim. We'll be right back. This is Well, 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 and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
This is Well, 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 presented by Joy sponsor VAC on Joy 94.9.
This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9. And just to wrap up an amazing conversation we've been having with Kim Burns, who is working on a project to do with aging LGBTI population and their experience with dementia. Now, Kim, I know that you had mentioned earlier that it would be great if you could get more either carers or those who have a lived experience from the LGBTI community to have a chat with you and feed into this resource that you're creating. If people who are listening wanted to contribute somehow, have a chat, find out more, how could they get in touch with you?
Thanks, Jessie. That would be so great. I mean, we actually see carers and consumers in the LGBTI community as key stakeholders for this project.
Indeed.
So we would love to hear from them. Anybody can email me on k.burns@unsw.edu.au.
And for all our listeners out there, we will be placing this link on our resource page for the podcast of this episode on joy.org.au/wellwellwell.
And potentially for those who are interested to have a chat and don't have email, have you got a number that we could give them as well?
Yes, 02-9385-2715.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Kim. Now, unfortunately, it's come to that point in the show where we've got to wrap it up. And I have to say, I've learned so much just from interviewing you. So I don't know about you, Liam, but that was a fascinating show to host, really. So
thank you so much, Jesse and Liam.
Oh, of course. Thank you so much
for joining us.
Totally. And thank you to our listeners. I hope you've enjoyed the content that we have produced today. My name is Jesse and my co-host here, Liam. It was lovely to be with you today. This is Well, Well, Well on Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.